Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guest. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast. Yes, yes. Welcome everybody to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. And this is exciting. Well, first of all, let me introduce the bad boys first. Matt Michaels, what's up?
What does everybody want?
Head! There you go. That just blew the...
just blew everyone away, huh?
Unintended.
King Lucky, what's up?
Hey, it's the king.
Street, what's up?
What up? How's everybody doing?
Awesome. So we're going to be expecting a call anytime soon from Al Snow, which we're very excited. We have a lot of questions we want to ask him and a lot of questions that the fans have either emailed us or post on our social media site. So we're going to try to get as many of those in as we can. But in the meantime, let's talk about what's been going on this week. First off, Roman Reigns. I'm going to leave this up to you, King Lucky. What do you think?
Awesome. I'm happy that he's back. This is... you didn't know what to expect, right? You didn't know if he was going to come out and say, hey, you know, this is it for me. Thank you, guys. But we got the desired result, which is for him coming back. And, you know, it's awesome. I mean, he came back much sooner than most people expected.
So true.
This is a great time, especially right before WrestleMania.
You think they're just gonna he's gonna be in a WrestleMania match as well?
It's tough. I don't know who you get to put him against, right? Who needs that heel?
I really wanna fight Roman Reigns. I am the game.
I think that he's not gonna be in a match per se, but he definitely will be in WrestleMania to a certain capacity. I can almost guarantee.
Well, my thought process in this whole thing is that he would help Seth win over Brock.
To be honest with you, I've heard you say this before, and ordinarily I get very sick to my stomach with a lot of your smart mark fantasy booking.
That's right.
But I'm at the maybe say that it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Seeing the Shield stab the Beast is kind of like seeing the end of the It movie where all the kids rallied together to throw the little fucking clown down the fucking hole.
So, you know what? But here's the thing. If you're gonna go along those lines with him, this is what I'd like to see is Roman comes in, helps Seth. Seth pins him, and then Roman spears Seth.
Mm. So because you want to see a heel?
So now you have Seth as a babyface with the title, Roman finally as a freaking heel, and this way we can get past the idea of the leukemia being the, you know, we're going to make him a baby. Because I think that there's that feeling out there that, you know, and it sickens me to think that anyone would think that this is a work to make him get over.
Right.
Which is just bullshit. And you know what? That would finally satisfy, I think, a majority of like, oh, shit, Roman's finally healed, man. You know. Like, that would be nice, because then you got a built-in rivalry. You can take Brock off TV so he can do the UFC fight. And
I agree. Yeah, I think it's a great angle. You also got, on Monday night, at the end, Ric Flair's birthday.
Woo!
Batista.
Woo!
And he will be in WrestleMania, I'm pretty sure.
I wanna wrestle Batista.
It's time to play the game. Yeah, well, the biggest question about Mania isn't, you know, who's gonna be on the card, but how grand Triple H's intro is going to be, because that's where most of the budget goes.
I you know what? I hope he flies in on a dragon.
I would love to see that shit, too.
That would be fun.
Some heavy metal in the background. Yeah. That shit would be fucking amazing.
You know, one
lots
thing
of fire.
Real quick, before we move on from that other match we were talking about with Brock and Seth, if they do not make a Beast Slayer shirt, it will be a missed opportunity, because he was also the King Slayer. So the Beast Slayer, and he wins the belt, huge merchandising opportunity.
Look at you.
And let me guess, you already got the shirt on pre-order.
Hello.
You already just put credit on shop,
WWE shop.com.
He was like, I got $700 just in credit waiting.
Yeah, I'm in.
That's awesome.
But I will say this. Let's quickly dial back real quick, because this is what I got when I saw Roman. Now, these fellas know that I am not, I don't get all geeked up over Roman, but I ain't no hater. But I will say that I could appreciate the story and be the fact that it is real life, which, you know, you don't always get. I think that how we talked about, because, you know, I work in healthcare. And when working in healthcare, one thing that staffing and clinicians and doctors even talk about is you try to be as positive as you possibly can. When you're going through anything that's like that, you want to try and be as positive as possible, even if your diagnosis is bleak, even if you don't know where it's going to go. You always want to keep moving forward. And the fact that he said that, I mean, it's kind of crazy, but it's probably one of the best promos I've ever heard him speak. But because it came from the heart, and it's something that, again, I love how it engaged the WWE universe. When you're able to engage them in that type of capacity, it's truly just magic. I mean, you can't buy a ticket for that kind of magic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes when reality hits, you know, and that's what pisses me off about the, you know, anyone who thinks this is work, you know, just look, if you go on Good Morning America and you talk about how you know, were battling leukemia with Robin Roberts, who is a survivor of cancer, and it's all work, then you're a piece of shit. You know, that is just fucking evil and cruel and bullshit. Right. So there's no way that it would be work. So when you have something that's real and it's integrated into the product, it creates moments that are just pure emotional reaction. And it's wonderful. And I can totally argue with, you know, you guys, but there's no need to argue. And one of the things really quick I want to get in here before we do get this call from Al, Quintessential Pro Wrestling is presenting a card on March 14th, which is a Thursday night at 8 p.m. It's going to be held at the Future Stars Wrestling Arena. It's 6035 Harrison Drive. It's Suite 5 in Las Vegas. And it is going to be amazing. The main event is Filthy Tom Lawler versus Josh Barnett. Now, these are two UFC legends, and it's going to be amazing. But the co-main event, Reno Scum versus The Rascals. And
nice.
Kids, if you guys haven't seen Reno Scum or The Rascals, first of all, watch Impact Wrestling.
Right.
And then go to YouTube and watch matches, because these guys are very, very talented tag teams. Of course, on the card, we've definitely got ladies wrestling. Heather Monroe versus Christina Von Erie and versus Delilah Doom, who is on her way up, man. Mm-hmm. She is a talented, talented wrestler, and we definitely love her here at the podcast. And Joey Ryan versus Priscilla Kelly. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm excited just to see what the hell is going to happen with that.
Right.
You can get your tickets. I know it is selling pretty quick, so please go ahead and look for PayPal. DANQUE2 at yahoo.com. $60 front row, $40 second row, and also the $30 general admission. And also, Trey Miguel versus Chris freaking Bay. I'm telling you, Chris Bay, if you're in Las Vegas, Chris Bay is like one of the... He's about to hit that next level.
Right.
Yes.
So please go out. Quintessential Pro Wrestling. They're definitely on their way up. They're presenting great product. So can't say enough about them.
I got the sound guy over here waving at me. I think we got Al on the phone. But just before we do that, ToyCon is also going to be in Vegas this weekend, 3 days, Friday through Sunday. And where's that going to be at? Is it a convention or
where is it, Lucky?
The West Hotel?
Gate. Westgate.
Yeah, Westgate. Yeah. Okay. Hotel, so you could be there, and it's going to be a lot of superstars there, so definitely go check it out.
Yep, Asuka, Becky, Seth, Randy. Mojo. Yeah, so, and that's Friday, March 1st, Saturday the 2nd, and Sunday the 3rd.
And, you know, also, too, this is going to be my first ToyCon ever, so, you know, I will definitely be doing a couple of video blogs on my social media on Facebook, Simon Street, because this is obviously a treat for me, and these fellas have been to one before. So, you know, for anybody that's out there that's never gone to a ToyCon, I'm going to show you basically a first-timer's experience.
Well, after that, we'll talk about it. And go ahead.
Yeah, and definitely we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll bring you some fan interaction. Hopefully, some talks with people you might recognize. And one of the big things, too, Ring of Honor, March 15th and 16th, Samstown Casino. Please, if you haven't gotten tickets yet, they are almost sold out. So get your tickets, because you don't want to miss, if you're in Las Vegas, you don't want to miss the Ring of Honor show when they come in.
That's true. Okay. Let's get right to it. We have a legend on the phone. He debuted in 1982, 37 years in the business, multi-time heavyweight, tag team, European, and hardcore champion, owner of the Ohio Valley Wrestling, creator of the popular wrestling brand Collar and Elbow, which is wrestling passion meets street fashion, and an owner of the most famous head in the business, Vegas Bad Boys is proud to announce to you, Al Snow. How you doing, Al?
I'm doing great, and I can't thank you guys enough for having me on the air with you tonight. Thank you, guys.
Pleasure's all ours, man.
Awesome.
So let's get the ball rolling, Al. One of the things that I'm more or less curious about in terms of, how do you go from the wrestling ring into being a fashion icon?
Oh, well, let me tell you. You sit down with Itzhak Mizrahi, you know, you have a little conversation, a little glass of wine. Next thing you know, you're making jokes. Not really. I just met my partner, and we had we got into a discussion about the fact that football had Under Armour for football fans, and, you know, UFC really, I mean, it's, you know, WWE bought it, but really UFC mixed martial arts had Tap Out, and, you know, Nike was for basketball or running, and everybody seemed to have something, but I didn't really see anything kind of identified, like, with wrestling, and, you know, for fans to kind of, you know, show their passion for it and show they were fans of it and if they wanted to. So, you know, we were talking about it, and we, you know, wanted to create something like a clothing line, like a brand for wrestling fans, whether you're professional wrestling or amateur wrestling, catch as catch can, judo, you know, people that like wrestling. And we didn't want to have the typical designs like what you see most of the time with, like, WWE. Not knocking them, but, you know, let's face it, guys, I'm a 55-year-old man. So the likelihood of me walking around with a shirt with some other guy's face plastered ain't gonna
happen. That's very true. And
so, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's a little uncomfortable. I mean, it's just not doing it, man.
And that is that's one of the best things you guys have achieved, is that the design of the clothing is practical and yet stylish.
fun, and we wanted to do something that, like, if you, as a wrestling fan, see it, you understand what a collar and elbow lockup is.
Right.
Most people, that if they're not wrestling fans, don't know. But and the same goes with a lot of the designs that we have. We make allusions to wrestling terms and moves and, you know, things of that nature that if you're a wrestling fan, you get it, you enjoy it, and it represents what you love, which is professional wrestling or wrestling in general. If you're not a wrestling fan, then you don't get it, but you just think it's a cool shirt or a cool piece of clothing. And if you're the wrestling fan wearing it around people that aren't wrestling fans, you don't get the typical, oh, you like that stuff? Well, what, you like it? That's fake. And you're like, well, congratulations, Murder, She Wrote. I did not realize that. How long did it take you to put those clues together and ascertain that mystery? You know?
Right.
It's just like, Angela Lansbury has nothing on you.
There you go.
Yeah, Al, you know, I'm a huge fan of the line. And in fact, my favorite shirt is the Mean Gene Okerlund shirt, the red one. And did you ever expect for collar and elbow to take off the way it has?
Well, we were hoping that, you know, it would take some time and eventually we would build it up. But we were really surprised at just how popular it's become and how quickly it's become so popular. I mean, it was, you know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, great designs.
And I'm thrilled. I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad they like them, and we try to use really high quality clothing, shirts, and things. I want the shirts to be those type that you dig through the drawer and find and pull out and want to wear because they're so comfortable.
Absolutely. And for the people listening, can you tell us where they can find these cool shirts and everything that you've put together?
Yeah, you can go to collarandelbowbrand.com, collarandelbowbrand.com. You can check them out. We got a big sale going on right now, and if you use the code Snowman, SNOWMAN, you can take an additional 10% off of the discount for the sale. So whenever you use anybody has a discount code, because we have a lot of wrestlers that have discount codes, when you use them, we try to motivate people to use the discount codes because, one, it helps them save some money, and two, it helps, you know, every time you use that discount code, like an independent wrestler that you got it from gets, you know, a $5 kickback. So it kind of helps support those guys that are out there on the road and they're paying their dues and trying to make their way, you know, and let's face, we all know how hard that's to do.
Right.
So, you know, but at least if, you know, I can help them out a little bit doing that way for the love of the business, then, you know, so be it. It helps them market the shirts and helps us sell them, and it all works together. And,
yeah.
And you can, when you go on, you can round up your purchase to the nearest dollar, and it's not, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot of money, but we take all of that money and we donate it to the Cauliflower Alley Club, which is a charitable organization that's been established, you know, to help retired professional wrestlers and boxers.
And is Vegas Bad Boys, we do have to mention that Cauliflower Alley Club is located convention-wise out here in Vegas, and it will be coming up this year in April.
Yeah.
Yes, it will be, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I'd also like too, Al Snow, is you didn't stop at just the regular size for the shirts. You went all the way up for the big guys to the small guys, and I think that's pretty cool. You didn't leave anybody behind.
Oh no, you know, we want to, you know, wrestling's for everybody, and you know, so I feel that so should be the shirts and stuff. I mean, you know, we want to appeal to everyone as much as we can. The bigger sizes, you know, we have to special order sometimes. You know, they're not as readily available. But, you know, if we know somebody wants it and they order it, we'll go out of our way to get them. So
hey, Al, this is Streak here. Hey, there's one question that I will be honest with you. I have always wanted to know. ever since I was a younger lad than I am today. Where was the inspiration and origin for Head? Like, I've always wanted to know, like, where'd you come from? Because once I saw it as a teenager, I was like, this is freaking amazing. I was pissing my parents off just constantly screaming Head all the time.
Well, Head is pretty amazing, I got to tell you. if it weren't for the grace of God and Head, I, you know, my career would have been over. So I'm yeah. thankful for Head, I'll tell you. Head and I met in New Britain, Connecticut. We caught eyes across the room, and the minute we did, it was true love. I mean, we were attached ever since. I mean, occasionally we argue, but, you know, like if, you know, we go flying, they always are insisting that I buy a ticket for a seat, another seat. I'm like, no, you can ride me over Head's bend. They're like, I can't breathe up there. And I'm like, if you couldn't breathe, I'd be a piece of screen. Shut up. But like they start bitching about, well, I want to go through the X-ray machine. I'm like, get cancer. I'm like, shut up. If you go through the X-ray machine and get cancer, the TSA agents would have white aprons like they do at the dentist. So just be quiet.
You know, speaking of Head, I still have the action figure in package that was the controversial action figure from the one where you apparently severed a lady's head, yet it doesn't look like a lady even.
No.
You know,
but doesn't. And the two women that were assistant professors of all things of communications at a college insisted, as they wrote the letter to the Atlanta Constitution, that my action figure was a training manual for future spousal abuse, which I thought was fantastic.
Oh, man. Well, and what's even funnier is, you know, I've got that still in package on the wall because, you know, it was just so ridiculous that, you know, it's like, I got to keep this preserved. But even better is I have the little teddy bear that is holding a teddy bear head, and yet no one found that like offensive to bears and how, you know, people are going to decapitate bears.
I gotta say, you're mistaken, because I did receive a call from Smokey the Bear. He was quite upset. I think Yogi was a little pissed too.
Yeah.
Gotta ask you, Al, this is Impact here. I'm gonna read a few questions from some of our listeners that we let them know that you were going to be on the show, so they sent in questions, and we had a few questions about Pepper. Now, the first one...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, how...
Pepper was near my heart until I had a bowel movement, but...
How hard was it working with Animal?
Oh, my God. You know, even in porn, they know you don't work with kids or animals.
Right, come on. Right, right. So did
you don't make that mistake.
So did Pepper...
You know, they will upstage you.
Did Pepper have to... Were you responsible in terms of the dog traveling, or was the crew responsible to have the dog with? And was there multiple Peppers?
No, there was only one Pepper, and they... and the way they found Pepper... was after I had insisted when they came and approached me with the idea of doing this, and I said, okay, I understand, but please, can we have actual trained animals? Oh, yeah, we'll get trained animals. I'm like, you don't understand, we need trained animals. So, of course, you know, I show up in Detroit for the first night that I meet Pepper, and lo and behold, they've just called a veterinarian clinic and got an owner, you know, a list of owners who were in the area that had chihuahuas. And the dog wasn't trained or anything. And,
of course not.
You know, that was it. And so every time I would carry Pepper to the ring and Big Boss Man knew what would happen, he would go out there and intentionally bang the steps with his nightstick, scare the dog, and it would proceed to piss in my hand.
Wow.
He thought that was so funny. So, you know, I really went out of my way to continuously beg and plead for trained animals especially when we got to the actual match.
Yeah.
Kennel from Hell, and I'm like, you need highly trained animals that will respond to verbal commands for people standing outside of the cell.
Right.
You know,
right.
So they can direct these animals, and all these animals need to be from the same, place, from the, the same dog kennel. So they all are trained by these people. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Of course we'll do that. Of course. Are you crazy? I mean, and every week at TBI, I would say, okay, these trained animals, you know that, right? Yeah, we do. We're getting them. Show up in North Carolina, Charlotte, and walk in the building, and whoa, what a surprise. I see a bunch of Rottweilers, and I look around, but every Rottweiler has a different person on holding a leash. And I'm like, wait a minute. And I find out that, they waited until that morning, and they called a veterinarian clinic and got a list of owners that had Rottweilers, and, one of the Rottweilers had some obedience training. That was it. So the biggest moment that we could use the dogs was when one of the 350-pound owners was running out to the ring with the dog and tripped over the carpet and big splashed his own animal. So.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Meanwhile, the threat of these dogs that were supposed to be like sharks swimming around the cage were urinating, defecating, and fornicating so much that we couldn't get them on the cage. It's tremendous.
That's awesome.
So, Al,
there's
a reason why they call me Simon Street. And a lot of that is because I'm always the person looking for street justice. And there is some street justice that you have not been able to get for a long time. Just to give you a premise of the question I'm about to ask. You have a long credit history of being in roles in movies, but there's one movie in particular that nobody gave you credit for, and that is the 1993 movie Rudy. Can you tell us about how you were unjustly not credited in that movie?
Oh, well, I was just an extra in that movie, but it was awesome to get to be a part of it, and I had such a great time. Being on a major motion picture like that, man, the budget is awesome. And one big thing, you can eat nonstop the entire day, and you can. I must have gained about 20 or 30 pounds. I swear, it was amazing. And the way I got involved was that I was doing. I had trained Dan Severin, a former UFC Hall of Famer,
right?
Had trained him for professional wrestling and worked. I trained him for the UFC, his first UFC foray, and he had a friend that was a coach of a minor league team, minor league football team, semi-pro team in Michigan, and because of the NCAA rules, they couldn't use the actual Notre Dame players, and so they had to use the semi-pro team. So they brought one in from out of Chicago and one out of Michigan, and then Dan got to be an extra and then called me up and said, hey, do you want to be one as well? And I was like, sure, and went over there and just had a great time. And while filming it, I was like, what's the title going to be for this movie? And they're like, well, we're thinking about Rudy. I go, that's it? Really? I can't think of anything better than that.
Right.
They just kind of looked at me, and then I'm watching them film some of the scenes. I'm like, oh, man, this is going to suck.
Right.
And then I turn around and watch it on the screen, and the way they so masterfully put everything together. I mean, that movie is just, not because I'm in it, but, I mean, just watching it, it is such a great sports movie. Just so awesome.
Yeah.
So I really, it's a great memory, and I really enjoyed my time doing it.
Got a question for you. You had mentioned Boss Man earlier. We had a few people asking, do you have a favorite Boss Man story?
Oh, yeah. You got to keep in mind that this is a different time, too.
Sure.
So, it's myself, Draws, Big Boss Man, and Midian, We're required to go. It was called a no bull session, which was basically like a just say no drug talk.
Right.
Oh, man. School in Connecticut. Here's the problem. Problem one, I've never done drugs. I know that I act like I do all the time. Yeah. But I'm constantly under the influence of them, but I'm not. I've never done anything. So what am I going to talk about? You know what I mean? This is going to go great. Drives his former NFL. We're not really sure. But Midian, yes, he's a professional. and he's good at it. And Bossman's pretty good at it, too. So much so that when we, we're pulling up with the publicist outside the Fairfield Inn, and, they have the limo, they pick myself and drives up, and then we swing around, and I'm not exaggerating when I say when the door to the room opened up, like Cheech and Chong, smoke just came rolling out. Oh, out comes Midian, Big Boss Man. They walk to the car, they get in the car, and they immediately pull out like a pile of pills. And they, the limo's got a bar, so they wash them down with some alcohol. And this is on the ride to the Just Say No talk. So we arrive, and they've had some more drinks, and they're doing fine. And, we're met by the principal, who is telling us, continually bragging about the fact that he was in Vietnam, and he's asking everybody to hit him in the stomach, because he's like doing the Houdini gimmick, like, I can take a punch to the stomach type of thing.
No,
so he keeps asking Big Boss Man, and Boss Man's like, I'm not going to do it, and he keeps blowing him off. So we do the talk, and, Midian gets up there. I love him. He is such an awesome guy. He really, truly is. And he's like, hey, kids, I don't know why I'm here. It's crazy for me to say just don't do anything, because I literally did all this stuff on the way here. it was fantastic. So, we're finishing up. Everybody's done their talk. Boss Man, myself, Drives, we're walking out. And here comes the, principal again. I didn't want to give it a shot, and Bossman's finally had enough. I could tell Ray was getting fed up. And he's such an awesome, wonderful person. He really genuinely was. But his patience was unmanned. So the principal kind of turned away, then turned back, and then that's when Bossman just drilled him right in the solar plexus, and he fucking wind and fell down. There you go, the shot. He just walked to the car. So Midian and I kind of helped the principal up, and the principal's, laughing it off and acting like, oh, yeah, it's a big deal. You could tell, though, you stand him up, and, he's like, yeah, I heard you talking about, tell Midian I heard you talking about the drugs. I was in Vietnam, and I, saw this, I saw that, blah, blah, blah. So Midian reaches in his pocket and pulls out, literally a handful, it looks like Skittles, and proceeds to go, have you seen this? That's what they used to give Gentle Ben so we wouldn't maul the child actor. That's a fish paralyzer. That. And he goes off all these lists. He goes, I'm going to throw all these down my throat when I get in the car, so I'll talk to you later. And just left the guy standing there like, holy crap. So we get in the car, on the ride back, they proceed to do exactly what Minion said, both of them, begin to throw them down their throat. And the tranquilizer for the Gentle Ben, the fish paralyzer, the whole nine yards. And I'm watching, and it was the most fascinating thing, because both Ray and Midian are both exactly physically the same size. They're both big guys, tall, and they're heavy. But I'm watching Ray slowly becoming like human jello. And I'm watching Midian not only become more clear, but he's also becoming funnier and more intelligent and a better conversationalist. Meanwhile, his partner in crime, he's having to physically support the whole time. And basically, when we get into a restaurant, he's having to hand feed him, you know, like he's a child. And he's just firing off witty remarks and laughing and having these great conversations. And I'm like, holy shit, how does this work? It's just amazing. Most incredible thing I've ever seen. So
at that point, and this is what fascinates me, I know how tight, you know, WWE is on their, you know, publicity, PR, the reach out programs and stuff. Was there anyone with you guys representing the company, or does this get back to...
Oh, yeah, but they, you know, the guys know how to get around.
Right. You know? Okay. Yeah. All right. Because, yeah, I could just imagine, you know, all of a sudden, you know, getting back to Stanford and...
No.
Oh, that's great.
No, the guys know how to get around all that kind of stuff. They're, you know, they've been on the road for a long time.
Professional, so, yeah.
They're not... Yeah.
Hey, Al, this is Lucky. I just
pretty well versed.
That was a great story. I want to ask you, you know, you put in a lot of work with OVW, and then, you know, just recently, about a year ago, you made the purchase for the company. What made you do it?
Some would say temporary insanity, but I really this will sound corny, but I really enjoy, and really one of my passions, as much as it is to actually be in the ring and to wrestle and perform myself, is to train people and to develop them and to teach them and pass along and help them learn from my mistakes so that they don't make the same ones themselves and are able to capitalize on opportunities that come their way more effectively and have a better chance because, you know, I've already been there, done that, made those mistakes. Here's what you should and shouldn't do, and here's why.
Right.
And the other part of it is that, you know, there is professional wrestling is truly an art. It's an art form. It's it's the art of physical storytelling within the context of a competitive situation.
Right.
And that there are things of that art that are being lost. And it's being lost under the excuse of, oh well, wrestling's changed. It's changed. And then nothing could be a bigger clock than that claim that it's changed, that it's somehow different.
Right.
It's grown, it's evolved, it's developed, but it hasn't changed. We're still selling exactly the same thing now as what we were selling 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Right.
But the departure from the real art of that story, of veering away from that idea, that concept of that it is a competitive situation that you're telling that story in, the more we get further away from that, the less that professional wrestling has its appeal.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, it has that appeal to, you know, the hardcore wrestling fans.
Right.
But, you know, they themselves are contemptuous of it because they're so familiar with it. You know, the old saying, familiarity breeds contempt, is nothing could be truer. And, they're so familiar with it that they're going to be contemptuous of it, and they judge it and criticize it so much that they really, truly can't enjoy it for what it once was. And the performers now will go out and try to appeal to that vocal minority,
right,
and try to appease those people by now not focusing on what even the vocal minority really want to buy and believe in is that it's the competition and that the win and loss have some kind of gravity and consequence.
Right.
You know, yeah. Instead, it's all about just what they do, not why they do it, or more importantly, who they are. You know, those two things are being lost, and here's my chance to still be involved in the wrestling business and do something that because I've loved doing for as long as I've loved doing it. I mean, I've never once regretted being involved in it or being a part of it, and here's my chance to, you know, continually do that, and you know, continue to do what I did when I first came down with OVW for WWE, and that's, you know, develop these talent and watch them go on and succeed. And, you know, OVW, we've quite honestly, I mean, I forget the number. It's almost close to, I think it's a little over 200 that are alumni that are WWE superstars,
right?
WWE superstars. And I forget the percentage of that number that have main evented WrestleMania that have came from OVW,
Yeah.
You know? And we're quite honestly, we're one of the last places, you know, anywhere that we operate a ongoing concern. We have a weekly television show that last October we had a 1,000th consecutive episode.
Wow,
we're the only other company that has a television, you know, product like that that has 1,000 consecutive episodes of WWE. I think tomorrow will be our 1,020th episode.
Wow.
You know, consecutive episode of television.
That's impressive.
We don't just run that television just to run it. We run it for the intent and purpose, just like WWE does, which is to, you know, use it as a commercial to promote our talent,
right,
our product, and motivate people to want to pay to come to the live events that we run every week around the state, regionally, here in Kentucky. To pay and see them perform.
Well,
and that's the purpose. And there's no other place really that exists anymore that a young wrestler can come and get that kind of experience and learn the skills on a level like this that they can then, once they get that experience and learn those skills, when they do get an opportunity to go to WWE, they can show up there prepared and ready to go and understand,
right,
what works for them, why it works for them, and really capitalize on that opportunity that's been given to them.
So a question I have then, with being OVW, you know, the name that always gets kind of put out there, and I wish that, I mean, I almost want to do a documentary on Danny Davis, because he is an unsung, you know, hero. Like you said, there's all these talents, they've all had him in common. And it's almost like this, like a 7 degrees separation, like Kevin Bacon. It's like almost everyone can be traced back to him. Is there something about him? What is it that has made him not only, you know, be so successful, but, you know, stayed in the Louisville area and, you know, just made this his, you know, his passion for so many years?
Well, I think, you know, timing has a lot to do with it. You know, he developed it and, you know, created it, and it was, you know, just shortly before we had the real big boom there at,
right,
you know, wrestling at the end of the 90s. But aside from that, I mean, you know, Danny's no different than any one of us. I mean, we just had a love and a passion for professional wrestling. And, you know, I think part of the reason that he stayed here in Louisville is that, you know, it's Louisville's a great city and it's a great area as far as, it's pretty centrally located as far as the whole United States is concerned.
Right.
You know, it's easy to travel to surrounding major metropolitan areas. The biggest thing too is that we don't, you know, right now and for years we've not had a major sports team that, right, entertainment wise we've had to try to compete with in regards to live events, which, you know, for a major city like Louisville, it makes it better because, you know, you're trying to attract people for your events, and now you've got to compete against, you know, either football or basketball, some, right, you know, the NBA or NFL or Major League Baseball, you know, where, you know, in other cities, Nashville has their hockey, you know.
Right, yeah.
I can go on down the list. So it kind of helps, you know, especially as far as combat sports are concerned, boxing and wrestling are concerned. And there's been a great history of and tradition of wrestling and boxing here in Louisville, you know, the home of Muhammad Ali.
Yep.
And, you know, and we, you know, they were a long time part of the Memphis territory, where they came up here every Tuesday night, you know, at the Louisville Gardens. So, you know, that's all kind of lent itself to staying here.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Got to ask you, Hal, one of the questions we got from at Pino Faciano, he wants to know, in today's wrestling structure, what does a wrestler have to do to get a contract with a major company?
What does a wrestler have to do to get a contract with a major company? Well, what a wrestler has to do is really try to become an attraction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a wrestler's job is not to wrestle. A professional wrestler's job is to sell, motivate people to want to leave their home, comfort and security and safety of their home.
Right.
Get in a car, drive to a building,
yeah,
pay a ridiculous amount of money to park the car, which is asinine.
Yep.
Right?
Tell me.
My garage to build it didn't cost sometimes as much as it does to just park it in a parking lot. It's insane.
You sound like you've been to Vegas.
I really want to walk in want to walk in sometimes and go, how can you sleep at night knowing you're charging this to just park the car there for an hour?
Right.
So, and then you've got to pay an even greater amount of money to buy a ticket to get in the building, okay, to then sit in seats you don't want to sit in around people. Let's face it, you don't want to sit around.
Yep.
Been
to
there.
Pay for food you don't want to eat,
right?
To watch that wrestler do his job.
Yep,
right.
That's a wrestler's job, is to motivate you. And let's face it, guys, how hard is it these days with all your options and everything, you know, to get you to leave your house, even for a major multi-million dollar motion picture? How much does it take? How many movies do you go see in a year's time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now, you know, we're asking you, especially on the independent level, it's even worse because it's not even those crappy arena seats. Now we're asking you to come and sit on, you know, the old metal folding chair, you know, for...
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, listen, you know, my roids are acting up, my hemorrhoids are acting up, and I don't know how I can do it for 2 hours.
Forgot the donut in the car.
You better be very entertaining, and you'd better be able to be somebody that is not just a great wrestler, a fantastic athlete. You better be a persona, a character, a personality that they can connect with and relate to, and that they can turn around when they leave that building, and they can describe you to their friends and family in a sentence or less. Hey, you should come with me to wrestling. There was this guy last night, and he's A, B, C, D, E.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't do that, you're not going to sell tickets for us. If you're not going to sell tickets for us, I got to ask, why are we booking you? You know, he's great. He's really good. Well, okay, that's fantastic, but ain't nobody paying to see him. So
right.
What's mm-hmm. the point? Well, he can do this move. I don't care if he can throw a bag of cats on his opponent. If nobody's going to pay to see him, I ain't booking him.
Right.
So
I got a question and then a follow-up on that because, I've been acting since I was a little kid. So I've probably got about 40 years of acting experience. And one of the things I learned along the way, and I think this is true, having, been in that position where you have to be an attraction in yourself. But the importance of what you're doing in OVW is giving the fundamental tools to work with. And a good performer then, like as an actor, I should be able to step on stage And I should be able to basically play almost like, you know, kind of catch with you. So, you know, I should be able to take my, you know, projection to you so that you look good. And then you throw it back to mm-hmm. me so I look good. So in that sense, when you get the fundamentals down, and this was something yes. Eric Bischoff said on his podcast just, I think, about 2 weeks ago on 83 Weeks. The question from one of the fans was if he had to choose a mind in professional wrestling, if you started a company now, who would you choose? And he said a lot of, you know, this might surprise a lot of people, but Al Snow would be on top of my list. And
really,
yeah, absolutely.
That surprised me.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was because of the fact that
damn.
Yeah, well,
you got a phone call to make.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it made sense because I think one of the things that I've learned from, you know, people that I've talked to in the business that, you know, you've got a reputation of being able to, when someone presents you with something, you're the one who can color in then the rest of the picture. And that to me is the most important thing, because if you know the fundamentals and you have a character, you now have to just paint that little, you know, take that nugget of what the, you know, the storyline is going to be and make sure you can color it. And you have the mind and the reputation. I mean, frankly, to hear Eric Bischoff say that, it was like, that's like one hell of a compliment. And is
very much so. I'm very flattered.
Is that something that you even like as an actor, I do things instinctually. When you hear, you know, a pitch of this as a storyline, does that stuff just flood to you of like, oh, we could go here, we could go here?
Yeah.
Is that, has it been like that for you? Were you creative as a kid? Like, you know, where does that come from?
I have no idea. I just know that when, you know, like people come, to, you know, like some of the guys or even when I used to travel with the other wrestlers, like with Mick and stuff, you know, we'd be talking and then all of a sudden it just clicks and I go, oh, you know what? We can do this, 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 and we can make this character and we can, people will get this and they'll understand it. Please don't misunderstand. I'm not, you asked a question of how does it happen, but like, you know, I'm not trying to put myself over. I can just trying to explain, like,
right.
For instance, there was a guy, I didn't know what to do with him here at OVW just recently. I was really, because he wasn't giving me anything
yep.
that I could kind of spark me that made me go, oh, you know what? Here we go. The light bulb went on. And he made one of those vague, hey, I'm looking for attention Facebook posts that people do, you know, where they, you know, so that people will ask me, hey, what's wrong? Is everything okay? Yeah. You know, right. I don't really want to talk about it. Well, then don't put your stuff up on Facebook, you moron.
Right.
But he had put up some vague thing about, you know, hey, comes a point in time, you know, you really got to reconsider where you're at and what you've done. And, you know, and you've got to wonder, you know, if it's, you know, your time's up or something like that, you know, where he kind of alluded to, and you kind of got the impression that he was kind of rethinking his career and he might kind of want to retire.
Right.
Well, he went to the live event that week and like, people kept coming up to him and, hey man, you know, I really appreciate everything you did for wrestling and all of that. And he's like, well, thanks. I really appreciate it. And he didn't know what was happening. But he had seen this post. And then like when he lost, they all kind of like, as he left, they stood up and started clapping. Like they thought that was the last match I've ever seen do. And he's telling me about this at the arena. Right, and he's laughing. He goes, "I didn't mean for that to be taken that way." And all of a sudden, I don't know why, I just went, "That's it." I said, "What we're going to do is on TV, you're never going to say outright that right. you're going to retire. You're just going to keep alluding to that you are, and we're going to get what we're going to get one of the baby faces to kind of feel sorry for you. And, you know, there was this one baby face at the TV title. He had just won it a couple weeks before. And I said, we'll just play this up. Like, you really are considering you're on your way out, like you're retiring. And then finally we'll have the baby face come up to you because you've befriended him. And he's kind of feeling sorry for you. And you're going to pitch out there that, man, I just, you know, that'd really be awesome just to cap things off, kind of, really make things would be if I got a title, just got another shot at a title. I don't even have to win, my last match, wrestle for a title.
Right.
And so, the guy, his buddy, he's like, yeah, you know what, I went to him, I spoke to the office, I made it happen. You what? Yeah, man. Next week, could you and me for the TV title? I'm putting on the line, man. You didn't have to. Oh no. I just wanted to do it for you, man. You're a hell of a guy. And I want to see you go out the way you want to go out. And so, get to the ring. I make it a point to tell this Dan was his name. I go, look, I don't want you to. Before the referee's going to present the belt, and before he has a chance to ring the bell, I want you to get the mic. I want you to put this guy, his name was Eddie. I said, put Eddie over as much as possible and be like, God, what a guy, what a man, to do something like this for me, this point in my career, and just your television time. I said, this is what you're doing. I want you to really talk him up and finally just go to shake his hand.
Yep.
And then when you shake his hand, snatch him in, hit him with your move, and tell the ref to ring the bell.
Yes.
I said, the ref will get disgusted, like, how dare you, and you insist he rings the bell. He rings the bell, you cover him, 1, 2, 3, you've won the title. And you walk out laughing, like, you suckers. I said, now you've got a gimmick. You've got a character going forward. You are this low-life liar who will do stupid nothing to get over on people so that you can win. I said, there you go. You're welcome. And it all just kind of, he made that comment about, people believing this and misunderstanding it and jumping to a conclusion. And I was like, that's it. We'll run with it. We'll play. When we got it to the point the following week where he was wrestling, he had to defend his title. So he's wrestling and he's getting his butt kicked. And then I had him fake a heart attack. collapse on the mat. And even I came out to check, and the audience was kind of like, okay, now it's getting serious, because Al came out here, because I never go out in front of the camera when I'm doing the producing and stuff. And so then we have Eddie, the babyface, come out screaming, he's faking it. And, of course, I made sure that we could, on the camera, you could see him kind of opening his eye and kind of looking and then closing it real quick. And then Eddie grabs a chair, slides his arm in it, and is about to take another break his arm. And that's when, the baby face, Dan, jumps up screaming, what are you doing? You were going to break my arm. He revealed that he was lying the whole time. And, then the other baby face he was wrestling ends up using that as a distraction to beat him and win. And we continue the story between Eddie and Dan down the road.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. That's wonderful. That is a beautiful description of a genesis of where you can take an idea and flush it out. And also, chicken shit heel stuff still works in this world nowadays.
Yes, it does.
Absolutely. Because we the key is, listen, I try to explain to the talent as much as I can. Number one, the audience is not paying to believe in what you do, okay? Because they can't relate to it, and they will never believe in what you do. And if anybody wants to argue with me, I'll gladly stand with you outside of any wrestling arena in the United States, anywhere in the world. We'll do a poll what they think that ring is out there, and they'll tell you it's either a mattress or a trampoline.
Yep.
Let me tell you, after 37 years of and living in constant pain, I can assure you, it's neither one of those.
Yep.
It sucks. I hate that thing.
Yep.
I hit it with a passion. The thing is brutal. It'll beat the crap out of you. Okay? But today, every performer tries to sell what they're doing. Can't. baseball, football, basketball have enormous audiences and always have. And there's only one reason they do. And that is because we have all played them.
Yeah.
We all have physically picked up a bat and hit a ball, even if it's just in the backyard. We've all played football, even if it's just at the family reunion with Uncle Bill, who got a little weird whenever he tackled you and it got creepy. You know, we've all played basketball, even if it was just in the driveway shooting hoops with Dad, you know, then pulled a hamstring and had to lay on the couch for you know. We've all done that. And that's why in Canada, there's a bigger audience for hockey,
right?
Because more people have played hockey in Canada.
Yep.
Why? Because it's a third world country, and we must take Canada down. Not Mexico. They look like us. They sound like us, but they're not us. Okay? That's where the real wall should go. All right?
Nice.
Trump's got it all wrong. You can identify from the South. You can't from the North. And the creepy people, they're just too nice.
Yeah.
Okay?
Hey,
that's
Al.
Why soccer has a bigger audience all over the world than it does here, because more people have played it. But as a professional wrestler, the one thing that the audience can always relate to is who you are and why you do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And those are the two most important things. And that guy now becoming a person that nobody likes a guy who lies, you know, is underhanded and is a snake.
Right.
Nobody. So immediately you understand who this guy is, what his motivation is, and he'll stop at nothing to win the match, because that's ultimately the only reason he's out there doing any of this stuff,
right?
That he's trying to win.
Anyway, so, hey, Al.
An answer to a very short question.
It's all good, man. Al, this is the part of the interview where these other guys allow me to be able to ask my segment. I had to fight long and hard for this segment, because usually the things that come out of my mouth are not very well. But I did well for this one time.
Well, listen, I got to tell you something. The way you're selling this to me, parts of my body are pulling up inside of me just out of excitement.
Well, you know what? You sound hard and in charge. Let's go with it. All right, so the name of this segment is, it is Name a Time, an Oh Shit Moment. Any time in your career. Outside of the ring, inside of the ring, does not matter. It's not the moment of bliss. It's the time you said, oh, shit.
Mm. Well, I've got plenty of those.
Moments of bliss or oh, shit?
Can come right to mind. Well, one would be where Mick Foley convinced Bob Holly, because I had been ribbing Bob Holly unmercifully for weeks. He convinced him, because he knew that I didn't wear undertights, and we were in Montreal at an ice arena in the middle of winter, and decided to have Bob Holly suplex me, hold me up in the air, because he was that incredibly strong, upside down, and then pull my tights to the side so that my junk would fall off.
Wow. Oh, shit.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And let me tell you something, that shrinkage thing is real.
That's awesome. Al, you know, Al, this is Impact. You know, I can tell, man, you've been busy. And I could tell, because I'm looking at Amazon here, and you have a book, Self-Help, Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow. It's actually going to be available May 7th of this year. Tell us about this, man. You writing books now?
Well, yeah, I did. I actually wrote a book. I also, just so you guys know, I do magic for the blind.
Wow. It's kind of like Dumb and Dumber with the kid with the bird.
It's my way of giving back to the community. Yeah. You know, they love card tricks. Let me tell you. It's like, is this your card? And it's like, I don't know. And you're like, it is. Ta-da. And you're like, oh my God.
Right.
I quite honestly, and this is the truth, I ended up getting talked into writing a, you know, kind of a timeline-ish type of book, where really what I wanted to do was write a book about all of my experiences and the ridiculous things that happen in the world of wrestling, that when you go out and you tell people that are not a part of it, they're like, there's no way. Like, you know, I've been on film sets, and literally people are like, well, you know, what do you do? And I'm like a professional wrestler, and they're like, they start asking questions, and I tell them a couple stories, and they're like, there's no way that could ever possibly happen. And I'm
right.
Like, no, it happens all the time. you know, the most ridiculous things can occur. And the two, and this is, I'm not making a joke. I really wanted to title the book, and the publisher chose that self-help thing, was mm-hmm. how to take shit and make Shinola and other life lessons I've learned from wrestling. Because that is the number one rule that I've learned in wrestling. Is that one, there is no such word as can't, and two, if you got a pile of shit, you make shoe polish.
Yep.
The show always goes on, no matter mm-hmm. what. And I've learned so many valuable lessons and have had so many amazing experiences all because of, you know, being a professional wrestler. I've gotten to travel all over the world. I've gotten to see things that people only read about in books or view on the internet. You know, I've been truly blessed and gotten to do what I love to do for as long as I've gotten to do it, and then just had some of the most ridiculous and being in some of the most amazing, ridiculous situations, all because of being in professional wrestling. You know, a van full of midgets, you know, one night, and, you know, just, and that was, they all got drunk, we got banned from IHOP, one got naked, one fell out of the back of the van, one went down the highway. I mean, that was just
they love to get naked.
So, yeah, well, it took about 15 minutes before me to talk him into getting naked, but boy, he got naked.
Well, and also,
you know, and
if Mick could write like 9 books, you know, then anyone can do it, right?
Well, I mean, Mick's very talented, and you know, he's very good at writing and stuff. Obviously, you know, what's really funny is that Mick, you know, for a long time would tell everybody he wanted to be a stand-up comic, and you know, we all laughed and everything. And now Mick's become a stand-up comic, and nobody's laughing anymore.
That's great.
I love that.
Yep.
So,
but no, I thought I'd give it a try, and you know, a lot of people had talked to me for a long time about doing it, and I didn't want to because I just didn't find it myself to be that interesting, you know, because I live with me and I know me, and I don't think I'm that over. But a lot of people tried, you know, went out of their way to convince me to do it, and. I got very lucky because Bob Holly had wrote a book and everybody was, you know, really talking very highly about it. And a large part of that was because he had worked with a co-author named Ross Owen Williams, who is a very talented writer. And what I mean by talented is that when I went out of my way to read Bob's book before I agreed to do anything. I could hear, when reading the book, it was like I could hear Bob's voice, because I had a lot of the stories that were in the book and things, I had, you know, been around Bob and known about or experienced or heard Bob tell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't like I was hearing somebody else's voice when it was being read.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Ross was very capable of doing that. And so, you know, thanks to Bob, I met Ross, and then that was what led me to agree to do it, was because of the fact that Ross, I felt, could write it and, you know, people could hear my voice as opposed to someone else's. I just want to say that I didn't want, one, you're not, if you're looking for dirt, you're not going to find it,
right.
Because I didn't want it to be a negative, dark, gloomy, hateful, you know, like every other wrestler is always like the business is like some cross they have to bear.
Right.
You know, like, man, it's the most amazing job in the world. It really is.
Right.
And I've been in love with it and been grateful to do it for as long as I've gotten to do it. And I didn't want to have a book like that. And I don't think that we need another one like that. And mm-hmm. I didn't want another book where it was like, well, yeah, so-and-so's a son of a bitch. And, you know, he's this and
right,
he's that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want one of those either. We all don't get along at some point in time, and you know, but
well, it, I'm, but it sounds
I'm too old for that stuff.
But it sounds like you found, again, very cosmic type of way, the person who could help you now take the words and paint the picture. So it does sound like you're reading the book. So you know it. I think that's the key in, you know, any type of entertainment to make it enjoyable is just finding that right formula of people around you who could paint that picture. And that's obviously you're great at it in your career, and now you found someone who's great at it in their career, and it should be a bestseller. So everyone please go out and order it right now on Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, that's 304 pages.
I wanted to. Yeah, it does. I'm very, as you can tell, long-winded. And I wanted a fun book. I wanted people to read it and just, and I wanted it to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very honest. I own all my mistakes. You know, I'm very open about the screw-ups and where I screwed up and the ensuing drama. And I take responsibility for my part in them. My mistakes in my career, I take responsibility for those, and you know, and I don't piss and moan or cry or blame somebody else. You know, I wanted it to be fun. I want people to read it and laugh, and you know, I read Kevin Hart's autobiography, and I thought he did an awesome job because he was very brutally honest, but it was funny. And it was enjoyable to read.
Right.
It wasn't all heavy-handed and bleak and,
right.
You know, I suffered and I did this. And you know what? I've had a blast.
Yeah.
Has it always been great? No. I mean, you know, when I first started, I talk about, you know, how I invented the carbecue, which was basically a Boy Scout mess kit where I heated up sandwiches I bought from a gas station on the engine of my car.
Nice. That's awesome.
Vienna sausages, spam. You put that stuff in there, slap that on the old manifold of the car. You drive down the road a couple minutes. You got a meal, buddy.
And hot and ready.
Hot and ready. Carbecue.
Hey, Al, I had a few people that had a question about, do you think you might be back in Impact Wrestling as a road agent? Do you think that may happen?
I never say never, but I don't think so. I mean, OVW and Impact, we have a joint show this Saturday, March 2nd, at the Davis Arena that, we're doing in cooperation with them. They're doing for a one-night-only pay-per-view that they're doing. Okay. And then we're using it because we're doing a live television broadcast with our television partner here locally as well.
Oh, nice. Good.
At the same time.
Okay.
You know, and it's awesome. I'm really excited to get the chance to work with Impact again and, in that manner. And hopefully, you know, it'll be a very mutually beneficial relationship between us. And if they want me to, I'd be, know if I would have the time.
Right.
To do it because I've got so many responsibilities and really feel like I have a great opportunity here to rebuild OVW itself and to the point where, like, when I first came down here with WWE, we built this up to where we did the last year before they closed, you know, they started, took everybody, 186 live events. Those, of course, were, you know, the television tapings.
Right.
But 134 of those were, you know, out on the road, different towns around the state of Kentucky. And we had an average attendance of 400 people. Now, granted, some of them were much greater than that. But when you averaged out the attendance over 134 live events, the average attendance was 400 people.
Right.
I mean, it was, you know. I know that it can be done, and I know that I can create a viable, ongoing promotional concern again that will allow wrestlers to, you know, if you're an upcoming one, it'll give you a place to come and develop yourself. If, and thanks to my business partner and the connections he has in his other businesses, we have a strength coach. We have professional fitness training, diet, nutrition.
Nice.
We have a ton of resources here now, along with trainers like Rip Rogers. I myself get in there, and several. You know, I've got others as well. with a very structured curriculum, and you know, give everybody the tools. And then if you're a wrestler who's had their run and you need some place to still make a living, and you know, and you're not going to get rich here, but at least you'll be able to survive,
right?
And then have a place to reinvent yourself and repackage yourself and possibly get another run up on the big stage, this would be a viable place to do that. I hate saying it before it happens, but we're going to make history, because this has never been done before, and I think it should. We have been in talks, and we've filled out all the paperwork, and we've done all the inspections, and basically we've got the approval by the state educational system here in Kentucky that we will be accredited as an actual trade school.
Congrats.
Not just a wrestling school, but we will be it'll be a 2-year program where you will, you know, go through and you can, you know, learn your in-ring skills, but you also will be taught all of the backstage and broadcast skills as well, with how to use a camera, lighting, production, editing, writing, you know, commentary, every possible aspect of it, of sports entertainment and broadcasting, mm-hmm. and professional wrestling, you'll be taught. And the great thing is that with that designation, you know, the GI Bill is now viable.
Right.
You know, any other kinds of student aid and financial aid, student loans, all of that, just like any other trade school that you would want to pursue.
Can I, Al?
Are now available to people.
Can I make one suggestion to you?
Yeah.
Because this is something I learned from going through a 4-year college, and that is, no one. I mean, I got an acting degree. That's great. I learned my craft. That's wonderful. One thing they missed was teaching me how to budget and live life while trying to pursue that career. And I think that would be perfect, because, you know, how many people go into pro wrestling and, you know, they start training and they just don't have a clue on what it takes to budget themselves and to live life, you know, because they see everyone as a superstar, you know, from what they see on TV, but they don't know what it's really like that we've experienced, you know, trying to make it, like you said, making your food on your car.
Yeah. And just so you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because part of the curriculum is also financial management.
Right.
So that you can understand it better and you utilize your finances while you're learning, so that you have a better chance of surviving. But also, if you do get an opportunity, say in WWE or another major promotion around the world, and you are now starting to really make money, how best to manage that to where you can keep that money and dole it out to where, you know, you can change your life going forward. And so that is another part of the curriculum, is financial management. And the other cool thing, and I forgot to mention it, is OVW is connected to, I have a network of affiliated schools called the Alcino Wrestling Academies. I've got 17 around the world right now. I forget how many in the UK. I've got one in Hungary, one in Denmark, one in Romania, one in Portugal, one in Greece, one in France, one in Italy, 2 in Chile.
And they started,
you know, and then all up and down the UK.
They started out of the UK, correct?
Started out of the UK in London, and then we've just been expanding ever since. And it's my hope that between OVW and those as well, that if you as a performer, you know, at some point you're going to reach a point where you can only develop so far in one place. But then you now have an opportunity where all of these places are interconnected philosophically. The curriculum is all basically the same, because I have a syllabus that I follow, and I send, every school has to follow that. So you can go there and you can fit in. But the thing is, technique-wise, style-wise, culturally, different audience, you're going to have a whole different experience and a whole different thing that you're going to have to learn. So, you know, as far as a performer, you know, through that experience, you're gaining such valuable knowledge that whenever you have an opportunity on a, like, WWE stage, which is now, quite honestly, is a global stage,
right,
you have the polish and the understanding to go out and perform anywhere in the world and be successful.
Hey, Al, you know, listening to you, man, it's almost like, you know, getting a front row seat at the professor and getting one-on-one time. To be honest with you, man, you're dropping mad pearls and taking a lot of mental notes. There is one thing that I did want to ask you about. And, you know, unfortunately, Simon Street has been very unlucky at love. And, you know, normally I don't get too personal on the podcast, but, you know, I've had two failed marriages, and there was a point where I was like, man, you know what, maybe just this whole love and marriage thing just ain't me. But, you know, with looking at you, you know, you're very open about your current marriage that you're in, and might I say, mm-hmm. You and your wife make a lovely couple. I mean, y'all look, I mean, just from seeing pictures, look like you guys are closest, you guys are best friends, you do a lot of things together, and mutually understand one another. You know, as I'm now healed up, you know, I ask myself that question, is the third time the charm? And I figured no other better person to ask than you.
Well, I can tell you this, because, hey, I've had two failed marriages myself. I mean, they've been awesome. And I've had some exciting moments with some other women that were even more exciting, you know, more awesome. Had one fake real murder and then put me in it. That was awesome. That's in the book.
I thought I had it bad. My God.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I always keep that as my ace in the hole when the boys are sitting around and they're starting to complain. And I go, well, let me tell you about this one. Let's see if you got that one. So, I haven't met anybody yet that could, but give it a try. But okay, this will sound morbid. And I apologize, and I don't really mean it in a negative way, and I want anybody that hears this to please understand that I mean this in the most positive fashion, and it's not as fatalistically sounding as, you know, it's in any way, it's not like that. I believe that everything is a story, and I believe that every story has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and I believe that everything dies. Everything has a life, and it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yep.
And whether it's a relationship, it's a job, whether it's a certain circumstance or a certain time and place or a certain point in your life, it has a beginning, it has a middle, and an end. You know, and it's up to you, because life is nothing more than it's a series of events and situations that allow you to have enough information to have great stories before you die. So go out and make great ones, and don't be afraid and don't regret, because all you did was you got a good story out of it. As long as you get a good story out of it, that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. Because I promise you, I'm 55 years old now. Not that I'm at, you know, I'm not, you know, at the point to where I'm so old that I now look like a dwarf or a troll or some medieval imp or something. Like, you know, that's the problem with getting old. You're looking like you're a mythological creature. I haven't quite gotten there yet, but all misshapen and bent and hunched and like hairs growing. And I do have the problem where hairs are now growing out of orifices in my body that have no business growing out of. My asshole looks like the inside of a wool sock. Biologically, what purpose does that serve? You know? My wife, Jessica, who I was dating her, I was trying to get over with her. We're driving in a car, and she looks over my ear. She's like, you got a white thread in your ear. She pulls it out like 6 inches out. It's a white hair. It looks like a kite string. I almost wrecked the car. I'm like, don't ever do that again. But, you know, you're going to regret more in the next 10 years the things you don't do than you will ever regret the things you did. I don't care how bad at the time they seem. You regret more not doing something than you ever regret doing it.
And
you'll never know.
And that's exactly when I, you know, got in touch with you. You know, I said back in 2000, you were doing a signing at in Burbank, California. And it was Corey's wrestling shop there that he had for
Corey.
And because, you know, Corey had that shop for a little bit, and then the powers that be kind of shut that down. But that's when I, you know, because I knew Corey, I was able to get in, you know, after things shut down, and we talked for a little bit. And I said, you know, I've always been a fan, and I love wrestling. I'm passionate. And you said, well, listen, don't look at it as a career. Do it as a hobby, because if you look back 20 years from now and you go, damn, I regret not just taking the opportunity to be a part of it and to feel what it's like to be in a ring and train and get all that. You know, you said, go, you know, go for it as a hobby. And I did that, and, you know, ended up at UPW, trained with Tom Howard and Samoa Joe, John Cena. I mean, these are the guys who taught me, you know. And it's like I'll never be able to say I didn't do it. And I made some great, you know, friends and, you know, connections because you were the one who said, if you think you'll regret it, you should do it. And, you know, and I think that's
always.
Yeah. And I think that's a wonderful point that you're making. And anyone out there listening, I encourage you, because you nailed it. It is a story, and it's you're always, you can always look back that, you know, you can pinpoint where was a beginning, where was a middle, and where was an end of this chapter, you know, of what I did. And that's, I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know, I mean, but you were wise back then at 36, you know, you know, or you know, right around that age. So I mean, that's what I've always respected about you, is that you've never given bullshit to us, whether we're fans, whether we're training, whether we're, you know, someone co-working with you. You've always been straight up and honest, and that is one of the biggest things that I think anyone can appreciate about Al Snow. And, mm-hmm. you know, if your legacy in the end is, you know, this man touched 1,000 people, which sounds very, very dirty, but, you know,
yeah,
in various different ways. But, you know, that, you know, this person and that person learned avenues from you. I think that is just an astounding thing outside of the video library that's there of, you know, your achievements in your career. It's a life achievement. You know, you're the Socrates of pro wrestling.
Well, I appreciate it, and it means a lot to me, you know, and I'm glad that you took my advice and, you know, went and did it. And, you know, there's nothing worse than being my age and looking back and going, gee, I wonder if,
yeah.
You know, and to the original question, I mean, you're in a better place. You know, you now, each time you've had these relationships, you now have a better understanding of who you are and what works for you and what doesn't. And quite honestly, when you do meet the right person, you know, you're going to be in a better place to actually appreciate and enjoy and make it a more positive situation than what you would have if you'd have met that person. Like, my wife Jessica and I always say the same thing. I'm like, I wish I'd met you earlier, but, you know, quite honestly, I wouldn't have been the right person that I am now, and we wouldn't have the same relationship that we have now if I'd have met her before. You know, from a personal standpoint, I was too much in love with wrestling to be as in love with another person as I should have.
Yeah.
You know, that was my own mistake, you know. But you'll find the right person, and don't be in a rush. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. If it ain't meant to be, then why push it, you know? you know, wife sit there and freak out and, oh my God, what are we going to do? It's not going to happen. Well, if it ain't going to happen, then count yourself lucky. That way you don't have to go through any more misery or have them showing up and wanting to key your car or burn your house down or kill your cat or any of that kind of business.
Is it sad that at least two of those things you just listed have actually happened to me? And the house like was said, not the house was burning down was not one of them.
Listen, I've been there, done that dance numerous times myself, so you know, don't worry. And a lot of it I caused myself, I'm sure. It's just, you know, it's what it is. So.
But thank you so much, man. I like I said, I feel very humbled to be in this experience, to be able to get that from you, man. I really felt like I was in the right place at the right time to get that.
Well, I'm very grateful for you guys having me on and giving me the time and allowing me to, you know, talk. It's been fun and getting to promote, you know, some of the stuff I do and things like that. It's guys like you. It's, you know, you, the fans, that are what are important. You guys are... You know, the fans are the most important thing in wrestling because without the fans, there's no us. You know, I don't get to dress in my underwear and butter up like a tub of popcorn and say fight another man for money.
Right.
You know, if I don't have somebody willing to pay to watch this homoerotic situation happen out in the middle of a ring. So
I want to remind folks that they can. Go to your site at the collarandelbowbrand.com to pick up some of those awesome shirts you have there. And your book also coming out May 7th. You can go ahead and pre-order that on Amazon. It's titled Self-Help Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow. And your school, as that gets going, Al, we got to continue to keep in touch with you so we can also promote that.
Certainly, please.
To everyone that's
yes,
out in the Kentucky and surrounding areas.
And also, Al, we would be open to, you know, what we want to do too is, you know, turn listeners on to people who are up and coming and, you know, make a brand for, you know, young people who need, you know, to kind of get that feel and do interviews and hopefully then make fans for life, you know, by being able to follow them from the, you know, to the start until, you know, their career. So, we'll definitely talk to you, you know, off the air about, you know, potentially getting some talent on, to, you know, help promote. And when is the, again, it's March 2nd that you're, doing the show. Let's get that in there so we can let everyone know.
March 2nd, we're doing a one night only with Impact Wrestling. It will be a Clash in the Bluegrass. And I'm proud to say this is the first time in the history of the company, of OVW, that we have sold out the venue before we even opened the doors.
Wow. Congrats.
I'm so thrilled that we were able to do it and very excited, you know, to get a chance to do this and you know, for us it's just one more opportunity to take the step in the right direction and make these bigger events and for, you know, and a bigger create a bigger platform and a bigger opportunity for the talent that are here in OVW that you know, all these young guys and girls, I mean, they all bust their ass and they, you know, a lot of them have moved from other parts of the country and have committed to doing this. And, you know, I told them when I first bought the company, I'm not investing in the company. I'm investing in all of you.
Yeah.
You're the product. And, you know, as long as I see that desire and that passion and that willingness to invest the time, money, and effort in themselves, then I'll do everything I can to invest the time, money, and effort in them. Because, you know, just like when I was with, you know, WWE with these guys and girls that were down here, I'm like, you have to understand, the way that I was brought into the wrestling business, it was very much whoever trained you was now held personally and professionally responsible for you.
Right.
To this day, I'm 55, and I'm still known by a lot of the old timers as Jim Lancaster, the guy that trained me, I'm known as his kid. That was the term, you know, you were someone's kid,
yep.
Meaning they were responsible for you. So each and every one of these people that are in OVW are now my kids, meaning I'm now responsible for them. They carry my reputation around on their backs. And, you know, and the more successful they are, then the more successful I am. And in turn, I'm going to do everything I can to see them succeed and for them to live their dreams, because that ultimately is really the legacy I want to have, is that I want, you know, all of these people that I've helped develop and pass on and carry on the art of professional wrestling to be my my little legacy in the business.
Well, we definitely,
OVW, I'm hoping I can do that.
And we definitely think that, you know, if you look at legacy, like I said, you don't even know, you won't even know the impact that you've made on so many people's lives in so many different ways. And I think that, you know, at some point that I think, you know, you've got to be recognized as a Hall of Famer. And even if the WWE doesn't, you know, doesn't go that route, I'm letting you know that you are a Hall of Famer in everyone's hearts and souls, man.
You and
Well,
Ed.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though they do complain a lot about when we travel and things, I swear. They all, you know, it's always, well, I don't like that conditioner. Well, I don't like that hat. Well, it's not like I can buy you a pair of gloves, but you're going to just have to wear the hat now, aren't you?
That's awesome.
What do you do?
Again, Al Snow, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. We would definitely promote all the things that you were promoting on our site as well, so people can easily be able to click to it and go right to your site to make those purchases. So any final words you have? Yeah.
I just thank you guys very much. And, you know, hope we can do this again sometime. I had a great time. And, you know, and then people just keep an eye on OVW. I'm going to do everything I can to build it back to its place of prominence and really be the source, I hope, for up-and-coming talent.
Okay, awesome. That's it. Thank you much.
Yeah, definitely. Look forward to that.
Once again, Vegas Bad Boy is a podcaster. I want to thank you for listening to our show. We want to remind you that you can pre-order Al Snow's new book, Self-Help Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow. This will be available in paperback and on Kindle May 7th, 2019. You can pre-order now. Also, don't forget to visit collarandelbowbrand.com. That's collarandelbowbrand.com, where wrestling passion meets street fashion. Are you in the Louisville, Kentucky area? Perfect. If you're interested in seeing live up-and-coming talent, or better yet, you want to be the talent, visit ovwrestling.com. The place is OVW. The site is ovwrestling.com. For all this and more, don't forget to visit Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting on our social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.